You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
September 15th through October 15th is Hispanic Heritage Month, and we get to zero in on some great stories this season, looking at how the Lord has provided for His church through many Hispanic and Spanish-speaking missionaries, pastors, and other leaders in ministry in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and our partner churches as well. And we have a great story to share with you today. Thanks to Concordia University Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
The Reverend Dr. Andres Melendez, he was born in Puerto Rico in 1902. He was orphaned by age 7, accepted the invitation to a Lutheran Sunday school and attended regularly. He was encouraged by his pastor to consider the ministry, so he attended college in Puerto Rico and then attended Concordia Theological Seminary in Springfield, Illinois. In addition to his ministerial training, he also studied English and German. He served Spanish-speaking congregations as the first Hispanic pastor in the LCMS Texas district. He was also the first speaker of the Spanish language, the Lutheran Hour, and he served the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod as a translator and editor to numerous theological works. Joining us today, Lori Siekman, professor and theater department chair at Concordia University Irvine. She's also the granddaughter of the Reverend Dr. Andrew Melendez. Professor Siekman, welcome to the Coffee Hour.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
The church knew him as Pastor Melendez, but to you, he was Grandpa Melendez. Share with us some of your stories of your earliest visits with Grandpa.
Well, they lived in St. Louis at the time of my growing up because he was working for Synodical Headquarters at that time as a translator. And so every summer, our summer vacation was to go to St. Louis and visit Grandpa and Grandma Melendez at least once, stay in their house just down the street from Hope Lutheran Church, where they attended. And we got many visits to the St. Louis Zoo, going to all the arch, and they would get discounts on baseball tickets as a clergy. So we had many Cardinal games and just doing all that kind of stuff. So very much the just normal grandpa and grandma things, but also got to do, my dad's a pastor. So when you're a PK and your grandpa's a pastor, you go to Synodical Headquarters on your vacation and you go visit Grandpa's office and, see where he did all his things. And we always had to go to CPH and browse the bookstore. So my growing up was very, Lutheran.
That's amazing. I love those stories. Like, hey, guess where we went on our vacation? Yep. All of the Lutheran places in St. Louis.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. That's fantastic. I want to know more. I just want to know your grandparents' story, your grandpa's story. It sounds like, just from our introduction, I feel like there's so much there that we could talk about. Tell us about your grandparents. Where did your grandparents meet?
Okay, so what's so funny is my colleagues at Irvine are going to chuckle if they listen to this, because I like to brag about my grandpa all the time. I'm always telling stories about him at lunch, and some of them I'm sure have heard these. It's like, your family member at Thanksgiving, oh yeah, I'm telling you that story again. So my grandpa has a great story. As you said, he was orphaned. He was being raised by an older brother. So he did have family, but there was a lot of just kind of self-supervision, as you could say. And so the story that I was told, you did mention he was invited into Sunday school. The story that we always heard was, he was out playing or whatever, he and a group of friends, and someone outside a church in Old San Juan that's still there to this day, my family and I visited there just this past summer. And a person came out and said, hey, y'all want to come in and go to Sunday school? And my grandfather's answer was, is it in Spanish? Because he had become disillusioned. He had been raised Catholic and everything was in Latin. And he was bored and didn't understand what was going on. And this was a Lutheran church. And they said, yes, it is in Spanish. And he said, I'm in. And that was kind of a, the rest is history moment. So he just took one person to invite you to come in to go to Sunday school. And many, many lives were touched. So he went in, as you read in the thing. One of his Sunday school teachers happened to meet a man named Angel Viarini, who had a daughter named Nieves, who then eventually became my grandmother. So that's how they met. It was literally the Lutheran church introduced that, as my grandfather started to attend that church, and he met Nieves and her family. And So that's how they met. They ended up being together, got married in that church. And yeah, so then he became active and involved in that church, and the rest is history. So that's kind of how they met, their family.
Let's back up. We know where they met. When did your grandparents meet?
You know, that's a really good question.
It was before coming to the States, correct?
I always was under the impression from how they talk about it that he was a kid. He was, you know, Sunday school age, pre-high school, because he went to high school and university in Puerto Rico. So he didn't come to the mainland, to the States, until he was an adult. He was always a very good student, got really good grades. And when he was in high school, he was encouraged, you know, what about going into the ministry? And so that started to ruminate in his head. Again, one person plants a seed in your mind. He started to think about that. And, you know, when I was talking to my sister last night, she reminded me that basically the majority of the Lutheran churches that were in Puerto Rico at the time were Augustana Synod. And the LCMS was looking to do more for Spanish-speaking ministries. And so they reached out to him when all of this talk started to happen about him possibly going in the ministry. And as he got older and he was more interested in it, the LCMS actually approached him and said, hey, do you want to go to the seminary? We'll give you a scholarship. So he ended up, that's how he ended up at Springfield Seminary. And that's how he ended up at LCMS, was through people talking to each other from the island and from the main, you know, from St. Louis, about how can we get more Spanish speaking help. And then he ended up going to the seminary, and they were married after he graduated in 1930. I think they got married that summer.
He graduated from?
From Springfield.
From Springfield in 1930, and then they got married.
I'm pretty sure he, because my grandmother, she was an educated woman, which is also not a typical. She went to a finishing school. I could be getting this wrong, but I think she went to a finishing school here in, like, on the East Coast somewhere. So they had letters, you know, long distance letters, you know, that they wrote to each other and stuff during, while they were both doing that. And then they, after he finished seminary, then they got married, and then they went to his first call in San Antonio.
Wow. So they were apart then while he was in seminary and while she was studying as well.
Yes.
Because I understand she also served as a teacher during part of that time as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Upon finishing seminary, where did the Lord then take them to serve?
So they ended up first in San Antonio, Texas. Again, from what I remember, I'm piecing together all these stories that I heard growing up. And from what I remember was that there had been somebody that was in this kind of a Hispanic mission or a church in San Antonio that wanted to go back to Puerto Rico. And so part of them seeking out, trying to get another LCMS Spanish-speaking pastor, was to facilitate that. So he went to this church in San Antonio, Trinidad Lutheran Church, and he became a pastor there and a teacher. My mom had him as a teacher till fifth grade. And he also traveled around that whole area, just kind of had his own church, but also went and preached in Spanish wherever he could.
I mean, the availability of Spanish-speaking pastors in the 1930s was pretty limited. He was the first Hispanic pastor in the Texas district, if I recall correctly, if my notes are accurate. And so he was also a teacher at that time. And if I understand correctly, your grandmother was also a teacher during that time.
I believe so. Yeah, I believe they both did that. And then until they started having a family and had kids. And then I think she focused on being the mom. I would be remiss to say they also had a tragedy early on. Their first daughter, Nora Elena, passed away at, I think, age 2, just from, you know, I always heard it was something to do with more dehydration or something like today that would have been preventable, but you didn't know. Mm-hmm. So that they always talk about. So Nora was their first child, and then my mom was the next. So my mom's the oldest, or was the oldest of the family, but she was born in San Antonio while they lived there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we have more to learn about in this story of the Reverend Dr. Andres Melendez will continue the conversation in just a moment. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
It is Hispanic Heritage Month. Today, we're learning about the Reverend Dr. Andres Melendez with his granddaughter, Professor Lori Siekman, from Concordia University, Irvine. Now, where we left off, he was serving as a pastor and teacher in Texas. Grandmother was also serving as a teacher there. Tell us a little bit more about anything else that you know about their time serving in Texas and where the Lord took them from there to serve.
So what I know is a little fuzzy. I do know that they became very close with the Mexican-American community there. There was a, you know, family, there are family people that we called aunt and uncle that were, you know, they kind of became so close with during their time there. My Aunt Cato and Uncle Philip, they were from that area and part of that ministry. So it's a little fuzzy for me in terms of what all they did there, but I do know that it became enough of a growth on the, you know, synodical awareness that more Hispanic ministry was needed. And so he was from there. I'm a little more familiar with what happened after they left San Antonio, because they ended up going to St. Louis, and he was part of was named Speaker of the Spanish Lutheran Hour that they started. And so that became the, you know, part of the biggest part of the rest, you know, for the next 30 years, he was speaking on the radio, which is why it's great that we're doing this, talking about him on the radio right now. But there's so many interesting stories. They moved to St. Louis. He began doing the Spanish Lutheran Hour. He started a Spanish version of the Lutheran Witness kind of magazine. But I got to fit this in. There's a cool story. One of your questions that you kind of told me about that you were interested in when we were chatting earlier is World War II. Mm-hmm. How did World War II affect it? And so there's a kind of a cool story about how, well, you got to remember, in order to go to seminary and become a pastor, an LCMS pastor, he had to learn German. The seminary courses were conducted in German. He had to preach his first sermon in German. And so he had to know it, speak it, preach it fluently. So during World War II, he was approached to kind of become like a spy for a little while. He went to Laredo, Texas, and posed as a janitor in some area. And again, the details are a little fuzzy, but where there must have been some German-speaking people or who were sympathizers. And nobody suspected that he spoke German because of his appearance, dark-skinned Puerto Rican man. They, you know, again, racism. Of course he would be a janitor. So he observed or listened or heard and passed whatever information that he was able to glean to the U.S. government and the war effort. He also helped translate intercepted German messages that they received. And again, he would go in and help translate these, and nobody would suspect that he would know and understand German. So I thought that was a pretty cool story of helping out in World War II.
It's really amazing how, like, you learn something for a specific purpose, and then God's like, oh, hey, by the way, there's going to be something completely different than you're going to use this skill to, like, for the benefit of your neighbor. That is just, yep. That's really amazing.
Yeah.
What else can you tell us about his time as the speaker for the Spanish Lutheran Hour? That's just such a cool thing. I mean, in his history, in your family history, and also in our history for radio and Lutheran radio, what other stories do you have?
It was really cool. I mean, he had a little bit of a like a celebrity status, I guess, in the Spanish community. It was really cool to hear his voice on the radio, to listen. I didn't grow up speaking Spanish, so I didn't always understand, but he just had a very powerful, beautiful voice. His speaking voice was clear. And I also was told growing up that part of the reason why he was perfect for the Spanish Lutheran Hour was that he was able to speak Spanish that was very like dialect free. In Puerto Rico, there's a Puerto Rican Spanish, there's Mexican Spanish, there's Spain Spanish, there's different ways of speaking. And he had traveled so extensively. I forgot to say that, like, while he was doing this, he also started to travel all over, you know, Guatemala and other places to help church plant. And so his Spanish was so clear and beautiful. And we would be out to dinner sometime, especially when we were visiting him, and he had a loud voice. So he would be talking and people would come up and tap him on the shoulder and say, "I'm so sorry to bother you. Are you Dr. Melendez?" And he would say, "Why, yes, of course." And then they would say, "You helped me through such a hard time," or, "Your words were something. I love listening to your sermons. This is, you know, like," and it's in Spanish. And we, you know, so they would come up and thank him. And as a kid, like, that sticks with you. Like, that, it was really cool. So, yeah, stories like that.
What are some of the challenges that a Spanish-speaking Puerto Rican Lutheran pastor might have encountered during that time? We talked a little bit about how he was called to serve in a time of war, but I'm sure there were numerous other challenges, but specifically given those circumstances, Spanish-speaking Puerto Rican Lutheran pastor, did he ever speak about some of the challenges he faced?
Yeah, he did talk about seminary and just, he felt the pressure to be perfect, to show, like, I think anyone who's breaking barriers, especially barriers of race and language, he felt he had to learn German perfectly. He felt that he had to do everything perfectly in order to prove that he belonged there. And the story that I always tell, this is the one that's going to roll the eyes of my friends because they always hear it, but he would tell the story of being in class and having received 100% on a test and the professor saying, "There's but only one 100% achieved in this class and Melendez got it." And he wasn't saying it as a compliment. He was saying it as a way to shame that, you know, there wasn't any Schmidt or there wasn't any Kraus who got this A. Melendez got it. And so it was kind of but my grandfather took that as a badge of honor and it didn't squash him down. He just continued to go forth with that. And as a kid growing up, I always thought, how short-sighted of them that he had to learn German just to become a Lutheran pastor. And then my grandfather would say, no, how do you think I translated all of these Luther's works and things into Spanish? I could go directly from the source material into Spanish rather than having to go through English first. So God had a plan all along. And when I was in high school, I wanted to take German because I just liked the German teacher. And I wrote him a letter and said, "Will you be disappointed in me if I don't learn Spanish?" And he said, "Of course not. The German is the language of your doctrinal heritage. Why would you? Of course you will learn it." And then I would send him letters in German to practice, and he would send it back to me corrected. So he loved language. He loved overcoming these challenges, you know, of building bridges, I think, is probably the biggest challenge. And it was important to him from little on. Is it in Spanish? You know, we go back to that question. He wanted to go hear the word of God in his own language. And it became his life's work. So that's why I love bragging about him.
Absolutely. Yes. How did his ministry shape your family and your family life, your mom, the rest of your family? How did what he did shape your mom and then your upbringing too?
Well, my mom married a pastor. So we, and a lot of us went into church work. Her brother, Andy, also named Andy Melendez, became a DCE. I, and many of us went to the different Concordias. Those who didn't go into church work have typically been strong lay leaders in their churches. The importance of our faith and the importance of Lutheran education and missions has just been like a given. It's just been a staple kind of in our family and a bond that we have.
You mentioned earlier the translating work that he did. Any idea how much or how many volumes? It's okay if you don't have a number, but I'm sure it sounds like it was an overwhelming number of documents that he translated, either from English into Spanish or German into Spanish. We're talking numerous resources for pastors, for laity as well, right?
Yes. I mean, I think there was a whole shelf. We'd go to CPH and like there'd be the grandpa shelf. But yeah, I mean, the Book of Concord, he helped translate into Spanish. Luther's Small Catechism, several of different Luther's works, a version of the Lutheran hymnal. There's a book called Proclamat, which is like a collection of some of his sermons, just tracts, devotional stuff. It was just, my memory of him is him sitting at his desk working on translation stuff, the literary part of it, along with the, you know, his voice of preaching. But he was just always translating, even into his retirement, he would still dabble in it. And it just, it was so important because if it's not in your own language, and that goes back to literally Luther, right? Yeah. Wanting the Bible to be in German, right? It's the same concept. So pretty cool.
You mentioned earlier, you had an opportunity this summer to visit Puerto Rico with family members. What was it like visiting some of those sites?
Oh, it was amazing. There were, I think, 25 or 26 of us from all over the states, all of us cousins. So of my parents' generation, there's only one left. So my mother has passed away and the younger sister, Sylvia, has passed away. So Andrew, the middle son, is the only one of that generation that's still around. My mom was 90 when she passed last fall. So we were talking as a group, all of us cousins, saying, we got to go. And so we and our adult children now all got together and went, and it was really a bonding experience for us. But also, we got together with about 20 members of our family down there, both sides of the family, from my grandmother's side and my grandfather's side. We had a big event. We were all together and we visited with each other and swapped stories. And it just really reconnected us with those roots. And we went to the church where he had been invited in, where it all started. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And my cousin actually was able to attend service. We were there over a Sunday. And my cousin and his family went to the church there for Sunday service. And there was a woman in attendance who remembered my grandpa from later on in his life, not from when he had been there, but she remembered his work in Synod. And it was really cool.
Wow.
That's amazing.
What a great story. And I'm so thankful that you were willing to share that with us today. The great story of the Reverend Dr. Andres Melendez. Our guest today, Professor Lori Siekman, professor and theater department chair at Concordia University Irvine and granddaughter of the Reverend Dr. Melendez. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thank you for wanting to talk about my grandpa.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.